Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today is a consultant and freelance writer based in Chico, California. Eric Miller grew up in Colorado and has lived in Northern California over 20 years. He has a B.S. in hydrology from Colorado State University and an M.B.A. in marketing from the University of California at Davis. He has been a chemist, lab technician, hazardous waste manager, landfill manager, water resources manager, karate instructor, and a Weight Watchers facilitator. Before moving to Chico, Eric Miller wrote a column called Garbage Talk, which appeared in the Davis Enterprise and the Woodland Daily Democrat. In 2012, he wrote a monthly column for the Chico Enterprise Record in North State Voices and has now published his first book called Let Me Tell You a Story. Eric Miller, welcome.
Thank you.
You say that you're a 51-year-old guy trying to reinvent himself, and it looks like you've done that numerous times.
Yeah, I guess you could say I have career ADD. I'm good for about 3 to 5 years in any one particular thing. But after hearing the little bio there, maybe when you're 51, you've done enough crazy things that you have enough to write about. But yeah, I'm trying to reinvent myself.
Well, you refer to this book you've written because I call the title, Let Me Tell You a Story. But in bigger print on the cover of your book, it says, Et Cetera Guy. Is that your alter ego?
That's an alter ego, and unfortunately, Et Cetera Guy is not paying me my bills, but hopefully that'll change. But the Et Cetera Guy was actually named by my daughters. We were driving down Interstate 5 to the Bay Area, and I was encouraged to continue on my writing career beyond North State Voices with the Chico Enterprise Record. And I was thinking, well, what do we call this thing? I mean, nobody knows me from Adam. And the only thing that came to my mind was from Anna and the King and I, and Yul Brynner, who's in charge of this island and an army. And he has this governess who's hired to modernize his life and his country, and how she tells him what to do, and he runs around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, well, how does that? Because the kids love the movie, too. And that's how it started.
Well, you have written a lot of magazine articles, columns. So why did you decide to write a book?
Oh, I was actually encouraged by some of the feedback from the Et Cetera Guy blog. People suggested, well, why don't you culminate this stuff or organize this stuff into a book? And I thought, are you kidding? And then talked to some other people, some other writers, and they encouraged me to do the same. And then as I've studied this whole blog process, and I'm still learning a lot about it, especially the technology, I thought, you know, it's easier for somebody to pick up a book, 130 or so pages, than it is for them to sit in front of a computer for a couple hours and just try to find where these articles are located, whether it's a sports article or aging or parenting or that sort of thing. So we experimented with the publication process, and it came out to over 130 pages. And quite frankly, I didn't realize I had that much baloney in me, but there's plenty more ahead, too.
Well, one of your the readers of your blog came back with a quote that I thought about you. And the reader of the blog says, quotes Ralph Waldo Emerson, "Do not be too timid and squeamish about your actions. All life is an experiment."
You know, I get some great quotes from these readers, and sometimes I can't tell if they're real people or if it's just somebody next door. Yeah, I sift through some of the blog comments and come up, there's some good ones like that, which also inspires you to keep going. Because as a writer, you really don't know how you're doing unless you hear from people.
Well, I was curious that you wrote this. Well, it seemed to fit your experience, your job experience, for example, to be writing a column about garbage. But you were saying you don't know if people read it unless you hear back from them. But I would think you would be getting a good bit of response from people in the Davis area if you were talking about garbage.
Well, that was over 20 years ago. So that was before Al Gore invented the internet, you see. So we didn't have this Facebook. We didn't have the digital media. That started when I was a recycling coordinator for Yolo County, and I was doing stories on what came in at the landfill each day. And at that time, the city of Woodland hosted a Target distribution center for all their inventory in Northern California. And one day a semi-trailer of laundry detergent came into the landfill. So I wrote a story about the day the tide rolled in at the landfill. And I didn't hear much from people, but people later said, you know, that was a pretty good one. I like that. And so that's how I got into this kind of goofy twist on looking at things.
But I think people would be interested in what shows up in a landfill.
Oh, yeah. I've seen trailers. I've seen all kinds of crazy things come in the landfill. And you kind of wonder, when I was a solid waste manager at the Neal Road landfill almost 20 years ago, I saw a travel trailer come in and was backed up onto the disposal area. And I was just thinking, what's this guy doing? And the next thing I know, a crew of three guys comes out. They jack up the trailer, lift it with hydraulic jacks, remove the tires, and they drove away. And I thought, well, what do you guys do? Well, it was cheaper to get rid of it than to abandon it. And I thought, well, okay. I never thought of it that way, but it was. They wanted to recycle the tires, though.
My guest is Eric Miller, and he has written a book, Let Me Tell You a Story. And Eric, when I was reading your book and I had it under my arm and a lady says, oh, Eric Miller, is that the skier? And I paused and I thought, well, yeah, he does like to ski, but I don't know if he's the skier. Do you know a skier that's a famous Eric Miller skier?
No, but I'll take credit for it. Okay. I do my share of face plants.
Eric, you were a kayaker and your boater friends challenged you to paddle Lava Falls. Where is Lava Falls?
Yes, Lava Falls is the largest rapid on the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon. And I started kayaking in the early 1980s. Actually, my mom set up a family commercial trip through the Colorado River back in 1981 and also in 1984. Those were motorized trips that took about a week, and quite frankly, we were spoiled. The guides did everything. We just hung around the raft and drank beer, ate food, got fat. But it piqued my interest in the sport, the rafting and kayaking. So I started paddling back in the early 1980s, and it became a dream of mine to run the Colorado River in my own kayak. In 1993, a friend of mine scored a permit with the National Park Service to go on a trip. This was a 14-day, 250-mile trip.
And you say scored a permit because most of us just assume, yeah, you go down and you fill out a form and you get a permit.
Well, back then, you would someone who was interested in doing a private river trip through the Grand Canyon National Park would have to apply for a permit through the National Park Service. And they had a wait list. And so if you're the first one in line, you get your permit. Well, my friend had been on raft trips back in the 60s, and then at this time he was 63, so he was on the verge of aging out. At least he thought so. But he got this permit in 1993, and I just jumped at the opportunity. Halfway down in that trip, a little past the 100-mile mark, I dislocated my shoulder in a rapid. And these waves are big waves. They can range anywhere from 10 to 25 feet high. And the flow actually we actually tracked it on my most recent trip that peaked out at 25 miles an hour. So the river is just screaming through that canyon. But I dislocated my shoulder in that 1993 trip, and I was able to have it reset after being out for a couple hours. We bumped into another trip that had a doctor and an RN, and they came at the right time, put my shoulder back together, and I finished the trip on a raft. But back then I said, I need a mulligan. I need to do this again. So I got on the permit wait list in 1994. And I waited a long time. I actually was awarded at the time, I thought the wait list was about 10 years to get
now
your permit.
That's hard for those of us who don't do things like this. That's hard to believe. 10 years to wait?
10 years to wait if for a private trip. And again, this is peak season during the summer. It's easier to get a permit through the Colorado River in January. And the river's only 41 degrees anyway, but I didn't want to go in January. I wanted to go in June. So I applied for this wait list in 1994, figuring, okay, I'm a single guy, no sweat, and maybe I can even advance a few slots. Back then, I didn't own anything other than boats and microwaves and a lumpy couch. But over a 10-year mark went by, and by then I got married. And then I had kid number one. Then I had kid number two, and I bought a refrigerator and a washer and dryer and large appliances. And life was starting to settle in. In 2007, after being on the wait list for 13 years, I was awarded a launch date for June of 2011. So I still had four more years to wait. And I was just beginning a little discouraged because now I had had a knee surgery. I had dislocated my shoulder twice. I was starting to fall apart, and I didn't know if I could do this trip, especially as the trip leader. But on one of my the story in the book refers to a bucket list trip with my parents. My folks came out for a visit in 2009, and there was a lot of banter among my wife, my daughters, the mother-in-law, my mom, and dad, and I were just watching this like a tennis match. And he says, "You know, we need to get out of here." And I suggested we go to a bar maybe. And he says, "No, let's really go somewhere. I want to. Where do you want to go?" He says, "I want to go to the Galapagos Islands and the Amazon." And so we snuck out while our wives and kids were bantering and bought tickets to Quito, Ecuador.
So off you and your dad go, and there's your mother. And she gets an idea. And what does she want to do?
Well, that made Mom jealous because Dad and I had this great 10-day trip in the Amazon River Basin and in the Galapagos Islands. He was literally a Boy Scout, and he beamed when he got back home. And my mom, that planted a seed in my mom's mind. Because 2 years after that, my Grand Canyon trip, I could take 15 people. And I had this one difficult time figuring out who is going to fill that last slot. A lot of people expressed interest, but then they canceled. And then my mom called and said she would go, which made me nervous because she was almost 70. And she's in pretty good health. But I told her, you know, we have to pack in and out all of our waste. We'll be roughing it. We'll be tending it. There'll be bugs. I tried to come up with all the scariest stuff I could to discourage her, but I didn't want to say no. I wanted it to be her decision, but I was secretly thinking she's going to cancel. It's no sweat. That's all right. Maybe I'll find somebody. But it ended up that she went on this trip. She was the token grandma, and she had a great time. She carried gear. She helped out, and we did not flip any boats. I didn't injure my mom. And
well, you know what I found interesting, too? You conclude this chapter by saying, "I now know why I'm who I am." Getting to know your parents that way, "I now know why I'm who I am." My guest is Eric Miller, and his book is Let Me Tell You a Story. And this story is called Even Hockey Coaches Have Hearts. You have occasion to track down your coach.
Yes. This was first appeared in the North State Voices column. I received an email from an old friend of mine who says, "I thought you might like to read this." And I was, the heading said Wayne Marshall, and I was afraid to open the email. I thought it was an obituary. And it turned out they had won the Colorado State High School Association's Hall of Fame Award. And then I subsequently tracked him down. I spoke to his wife. I thought maybe, you know, Mrs. Marshall, I played with coach in 1980. I just want to say hello to him and congratulate him. And
no she idea said, that she would remember you.
I had no idea she would remember me, and she did. And he called me the next day, and I interviewed him, and then he shared with me that on a Christmas Eve a number of years ago, or 2 or 3 years ago, he had an open emergency heart surgery. And then I remember him as a tough, grumbling SOB, but he was just has a heart of gold, and he had a soft, quiet voice when I spoke with him. And it was very we just picked up like in a conversation like we just had it yesterday. But 30 years had gone by, and I just thanked him for the impact that he made on my life and for encouraging me. And I knew all of his critiques were never personal; they were all purposeful.
You know, those of us who are teachers remember our students from years back, and I think maybe students don't realize that.
Right. In the closing sentence or paragraph in that story about even hockey coaches have heart.
Well, before you get to the closing, because you made me cry with that one, Eric.
Oh, was it that bad?
But before you got to that, you made me laugh, and because the coach was saying that, he said, "Your passing has improved." Oh, and you think, "Oh, well, that's good. Thanks, coach." And then you said, "Yeah, it's gone from terrible to bad." Then you said, "Someone with a sensitive ego would have sulked, but I actually felt complimented. Consider the entire spectrum on the improvement scale. I went from terrible to bad. I was on the way to becoming poor, climbing the ladder to fair, good, excellent, and then ultimately awesome." So when your coach tells you you've improved, you're happy to hear that. It's just you improved from terrible to bad.
That's right. I remember that day. I was walking into the gym, and he, Miller, get in here. And I'm thinking, oh, brother, what does he want now? Just like any 17-year-old kid looks at an adult. And at this time, he seemed ancient to me. I don't even think he was 40 years old. But he says, come in here. Your passing's just terrible. It was awful. And so when I tried in college, that was one of the reasons why I didn't make the team. A terrible passing.
So your hockey career ended with your high school career.
It did.
But then now, how do you conclude this story about Coach?
Okay. The last paragraphs are in that particular story. Hockey coaches aren't known for their cuddliness. Though Coach was tough on me, I wanted him to know that I appreciated him. His corrections were never personal. He sought to help me become better. Very rarely do we express our appreciation to others, whether it's a family member, friend, teacher, or boss. But if you get the chance, tell them now while they're still living. They won't hear you after they're gone.
This is Eric Miller. He's reading from his collection of stories, Let Me Tell You a Story. I don't know if some people might disagree with you there when you say they won't hear you after they're gone.
Yes. Well, maybe some would disagree. I would hope that they can hear us after they're gone.
But the moral of the story is tell them
tell
now.
Tell them now. That's right.
Well, you have different topics that you cover in your book, and some of them have to do with taking care of home and yard. And there is a story in there where Stuart the gopher loses the war. What about that story, Eric?
Okay, my wife is really the yard connoisseur. I just run lawn mowers and typically run over garden hoses and rocks and tennis balls that the dogs leave out. But that particular story was inspired one Christmas morning when one of our tomcats brought a gopher inside the house. It was Christmas morning, and I was the first one up, and I was had a nice hot cup of coffee. Looking at the Christmas tree, meditating on the reason for the season, looked at some of the Christmas story in the New Testament. I'm thinking, you know, this is just the perfect morning. And then the kids slowly start waking up, and then one of them shrieked, Dad, there's a gopher in the house! And then that's when all hell broke loose, and we were chasing this gopher around the house on Christmas morning. And then how my wife, you know, says to me, kill it. Take it outside, do something with it. And I said, well, come on, we're celebrating the birth of Jesus. What? I can't do this today. I'm just not mentally there. And that's how she took care of it. And then I got to thinking, why are gophers so active during the wintertime? And then I did some research on the state's fish and game website and looked on some technical journals and wrote that story about how gophers migrate and how they're polygamous. I don't know how they figured that out. Somebody studied that, a polygamy in gophers. And anyhow, that it's how I think we should create a new demand with this gophers.
You didn't want to kill the gopher, and you didn't want to, so you're kind of stuck. You came up with an alternative that most people wouldn't consider.
Well, I would suggest that people trap them and actually eat them. I found actually a recipe on cook.com for gopher stew, and all you need is about 18 gophers to make it. And it was totally serious. And all you need to do is catch about 18 gophers and butcher them.
But could you find enough friends and family to eat gophers?
No.
That you need to cook that many?
I'm sure there's plenty of gophers out there.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, but, I think that would kind of unsettle the neighborhood if there was a big gopher hunt. But that's how that story went. And I've got some hunting friends of mine in town, and I'm always teasing them. They're always talking about fishing and hunting and this and that. And I said, look, you guys, you should just really catch gophers, learn how to cook them. You'd make a bajillion dollars here in Northern California. So,
well, then you also, several times in your stories, Husqvarna, the brand name Husqvarna comes up, and you rave about your Husqvarna lawnmower.
Right. That we have, there's this rule of three. I have three hockey jerseys, three lawnmowers, three pairs of pants that I actually would be eligible to go to a wedding, that sort of thing. But I was born in Sweden, so I try to support their economy when I can. And my wife, Hun, that's her nickname, alerted me to this lawnmower at the hardware store. And so this story talks about how I bought, hooked up one of my three trailers to go to the hardware store to pick out this lawnmower. And it was a front-wheel drive, self-propelled lawnmower, Husqvarna, orange, but it was powered by a Honda motor. So that got my mind thinking, how'd that work? Sweden is in the northern hemisphere, about a bajillion latitudes and longitudes away from Japan. How do these guys collaborate? I mean, this is global collaboration at its best. You know, how did these guys, the Swedes and the Japanese, get together to collaborate on this lawnmower? You know, we've already bought their cars. Now they want us to fill our sheds, you know, with lawnmowers. And so that's how that story develops about, you know, it had more power. It was powerful enough to pull a water skier. So I actually posed a picture in the front yard where I was wearing water skis and a life jacket when I was standing behind this lawnmower. So that story accompanied that post on my blog.
Speaking of photographs, I mentioned on the front cover, there's this nice picture of you and your dog. But on the back cover, Eric, I'm surprised you, forgive me for saying this, that you had the nerve to put this photograph on your book cover.
You mean you haven't seen a man with Halloween Speedos and cowboy boots at Trick or Treat?
No, I have not.
That was a story I wrote about trick or treating with my eighth grader. And she's at that age, Maggie's her nickname, where she's too old to really do anything with me. But she was this particular year young enough to still want to go trick-or-treating. My oldest daughter, Kate, is in high school, and she just wasn't interested. But Maggie says to me, you have to dress up. So I said, okay, fine, I will. So I found some Tony Lama cowboy boots from the closet and put on some Speedos, and I wore a straw hat, and we walked in. I didn't make it very far. The kids were horrified, and I was actually going to I'd go to the neighbor's house because they have a good sense of humor, but they weren't home. And then it occurred to me, if I crossed the street into a real neighborhood where we don't know the people, that I'd probably be arrested or something. So I ran back in the house and changed into regular clothes.
Okay.
But the picture was great. It had like over 10,000 views on Facebook.
Okay. Well, you have, speaking of holidays, you deal with Halloween, with Christmas. You say it won Christmas, wife trumps husband at Christmas.
Right. That story, it centered back on a weed eater incident where we had two of them, and I couldn't start one of them. And I took it apart and tried to reassemble it, and I just had nothing but a pile of spare parts. And I was very frustrated. So I put that weed eater out on the front yard with a free sign. And then my wife, Hun, asked me where the weed eater is. And I said, well, it doesn't work, you know, all kinds of problems. So I put it on the curb with a free sign. And then she peered over the fence, and it was gone. And that's when the argument started. And how over a period of time, 6 months later, she actually said that, you know, you gave away your weed eater. Well, I thought, no, we're a communal state. This is our weed eater.
You had the mistaken impression it was our weed eater.
I was under the impression it was our family weed eater. But no, it all of a sudden became my weed eater.
That you had given away.
That I had given away. And so we had a backup weed eater, which now we have this new Husqvarna weed eater, which is awesome because it's more powerful than a Toyota Prius. But about 6 months after that summer incident, Hun came in with a kennel in the back of the SUV, and she asked me to unload it. And I said, well, sure. You know, I said, what is it? She said, it's a Christmas present. And so I asked her, do you want me to wrap it? And she says, nah, you can't wrap. You're short on the corners. You always wreck it. It's a train wreck when you try to wrap presents. And I said, well, you can take it inside. And I said, okay, fine. And I looked inside, opened a box inside of a box because she's kind of a trickster. And I looked inside this kennel, and I saw this nose and the crooked teeth and a horn. Then I heard this, bah, like, what are you doing here? What gives? And she says, Merry Christmas. That's for the husband who has everything. This is your new weed eater. So she gave me a goat for Christmas, and it was about the size of a rat terrier
A tiny little goat. You have a photograph of it.
I have a photo. Tiny. That's right. It was a cute little goat. We named her Nestle. She followed me around the backyard with all our other critters.
Well, another holiday you treat is Father's Day, and you have advice, Father's Day advice. What Father's Day advice do you have, Eric?
You know, I think they'd keep it simple. I did write, you know, it's easy enough to write down the 8 top things you should get Dad for Father's Day. And, you know, golf lessons, golf passes, you know, soap on the rope, ties, slacks. We don't need that stuff. I mean, if you really want to get us something cool like a Porsche. You know, but don't waste your time with soap on the rope. Just go straight for the good stuff. But really, at the end of the day, all dads want and have is happiness in the home with their wife and their kids. And if you want to take us out to dinner or barbecue a steak and have corn on the cob and go out for cake later, that's really all we need. It's quite simple, quite really. So I'll have to think of something better for this Father's Day, though.
My guest is Eric Miller, and he has collected stories. His collection is called Let Me Tell You a Story. And you mentioned this project that you undertook. And I was guessing before you mentioned who some of your favorite writers were, I could guess who they were, mm-hmm. just from your style, who some of your favorite writers were. And you call this the Humor Project, and you actually went on the road to interview some of your favorites. We don't have time to talk about those, but just briefly, who are some of your favorite writers?
Well, I really enjoy, of course, Dave Barry is just phenomenal. But Will Durst is another person I enjoy reading, a political satirist. Pat McManus, who's a humor writer for Field and Stream, a New York Times bestseller. Jeffrey Bergeron in Colorado. All these folks are just, you pick up their books or their articles, and you are entertained from the first word. And so it's been a process of mine to reach out and try to interview these folks as part of my humor project, and maybe that'll turn into another book.
And you have favorites going back to Irma Bombeck, Andy Rooney. I noticed Bill Geist in that list.
Oh,
and, of course, Public Radio's Garrison Keillor.
Garrison Keillor. And I actually I was in the audience when he was visiting Chico a couple of years ago, and he just floored me. It's just amazing. Yeah, Andy Rooney, Mark Twain. So I think One question posed by Pat McManus on his site is, where have all the humor writers gone? So that's been my query. Where are they? Where are these people? Is our sense of humor changing? Are we losing? Is it because of technology? Is it because of our personal tastes and preferences? What is it? Where are these people? Let's meet them.
So you have, where are your new heroes?
Yeah, so I've been the learning new heroes, and well, I'd love to become one, but... There's a few people on this list who are national writers, and
Bill Cosby,
Joel Stein from Time Magazine.
Yes, I saw him.
Very edgy, but that's where they take you, and they take you to the margins of edginess, and it's up to you as the reader to determine whether it's been crossed.
It's been a pleasure reading your stories and talking to you, Eric.
Thank you.
My guest has been Eric Miller. His book is Let Me Tell You a Story. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, kcho.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.